Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So this episode follows on from last week's episode where I talked about the fourth of my foundational pillars to address for a happier, healthier and easier perimenopause. So these are the four pillars that I take all of my one-to-one clients through where applicable. We get these pillars really laid down and optimized as much as possible before we start sort of digging into other things that might be going on. But these are the pillars that everybody works through inside the Empowered Perimenopause subscription program as well. So the fourth pillar being nourishing movement and muscle building exercise. So that was last week's episode. So go back and listen to that if you haven't done already. So I explain what that pillar kind of encompasses and essentially how we want to be approaching our exercise in our 40s and beyond. So today I wanted to talk in more 40 plus, more than ever before. I've talked about it before in previous episodes. I talked about it in the last episode. I just didn't go into as much detail as I want to go into today. So basically, the more muscle mass you have and continue to build, the better your experience of perimenopause and menopause will be, not just by way of symptoms, but also just health generally, health protection, safeguarding so many different aspects of our health. Building muscle might not be something that you've given much thought to, other, you know, outside of maybe knowing that, you know, to lose body fat and have a healthier looking body composition and body shape, that you want to have more what people refer to as lean muscle. All muscle is lean muscle, but some, you know, you might hear within the fitness industry and the weight loss industry looking long and lean. So you might not have thought about it much further than that, other than, you know, past how it looks aesthetically. But when it comes to solving a lot of the typical and most troublesome perimenopause symptoms, trust me when I say that building muscle is essential for perimenopause, for our experience of those symptoms, for how we move through it, how we then move into menopause itself and experience life post-menopause. So that's what I'm going to talk through today. So again, not only for weight management and fat loss, but really important, the more muscle mass we have, it will help to improve a lot of the neurological symptoms of perimenopause, like the brain fog and all the memory issues that, you know, that typical symptoms associated with brain fog, like trouble recalling a word or remembering why you walked into a room or just suddenly losing your train of thought in a conversation, as well as hot flushes, night sweats, headaches, migraines, mood issues. These are all the brain related symptoms, and having more muscle mass can improve those. It's even helpful for managing sleep as well. And that's what's great about utilizing nutrition and lifestyle support when it comes to helping our bodies basically deal with the likes of hormonal imbalances and then perimenopause and then life postmenopause, because the chances of symptoms and the severity of those symptoms is within our control if we just know the various nutrition and lifestyle aspects of health, essentially, that help to support them. And building muscle is definitely one of the ways that we can support ourselves in this phase of life. And as I said, beyond forever. There's the three big health risks, right, that we have associated with life postmenopause, from when estrogen, also from sort of late perimenopause, when estrogen is genuinely starting its further and further decline month on month on month until we eventually go 12 months without having a period. Then at that day, we have reached menopause itself. And within those 12 months that we were waiting to go without having a period, we didn't have any estrogen. If we're not cycling, then we're not making estrogen. So in that sort of year leading up to when we're waiting to go those 12 months and say that we are at menopause, and then definitely from that day onwards in postmenopause, we don't have any estrogen. And the three big health risks associated with that loss of estrogen are dementia, heart attack and stroke. But we also have, of course, the risk of osteoporosis, so weaker bones, and all the other health risks that come with that later on in life. Building muscle is so protective of all of these things. Let me just kind of go through why having good amounts of muscle mass is so important in more detail. And then we'll look at why you need to be building it now more than ever. You know, you might think, well, why won't we be doing this at 20s, 30s? Yes, we always want to be doing muscle building activities, but I just want to explain or kind of reiterate why it's so much more important 40. And then you'll really hopefully feel so empowered after that, that you just know it's something you need to build into your life. So muscle supports and improves our metabolism. Now, the word metabolism can refer to thousands and thousands of different chemical pathways in the body happening constantly, all the time. But that's not what I'm talking about today. You know, metabolism refers to sort of breakdown processes within the body and sort of different chemical pathways that are going on 24/7. That isn't what I'm referring to when I use the word metabolism today. And in fact, the word metabolism has really been sort of taken over by the weight loss and fitness industries over the years. And it's been a word associated with weight loss, basically. So, you know, I'm sure you'll agree over the years, when you think of the word metabolism, you think of weight. When somebody says slow metabolism, you think of weight gain, and fast metabolism, you think of weight loss. But what I mean when I say it, when I say metabolism, when I say something supports and improves your metabolism, what I mean is that that thing supports your metabolic health as a whole. And your metabolic health includes things like blood sugar control, insulin control, which safeguards health generally, and specifically safeguards you from developing insulin resistance. And then from there, unaddressed, that would go on to be type 2 diabetes and potentially obesity, which is a disease in itself, and also heart health and brain health. So these are all what comes under the banner of metabolic health. It's essentially what it is. And muscle literally protects and supports your metabolic health, which also means your metabolism, which does in some way mean, you know, refer to how quickly you essentially burn fat, burn sugar and fat for energy, and therefore keep your weight under control. So muscle strengthens and protects our bones as well. So during, for example, any weight bearing activity, particularly with sort of heavier resistance, so heavier weights, the muscles and tendons apply tension to the bones, which stimulates those bones to produce more bone tissue. And as a result of that, those bones become stronger and more dense. So when we're thinking of life post-menopause, when that osteoporosis risk goes higher, and women of, you know, much older years, let's say 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even, when they're more susceptible to hip fractures or, you know, falling and having some sort of break. Whereas in your kind of younger decades, 20s, 30s, you might fall but not necessarily break anything. That risk isn't really that high of an actual break. And post-menopause, that risk does get a bit higher. And the further that we go through life post-menopause, that comes higher. So if we can think that muscle strengthens and protects our bones, like I said, it actually strengthens them. So it helps them to become stronger and improves bone density, the bone turnover increases. But it also, having more muscle surrounding, let's say, your knee, your hip, your ankle, you know, that's going to be more protective of those bones. So if you were to fall, it would be less likely that you would have those breaks because of this muscle that's surrounding those bones and protecting them. So that's what's really, really important to take home, is that it's never too late in life to start building muscle. So start putting things into your week as a habit that builds muscle, allows you to continue to consistently be building muscle and holding on to it. And it's never too late. There's women in their 60s, there's women in their 70s who start lifting weights. And that will have a beneficial effect in their later life, like from now, you know, and in their later years as well. So very, very important to be considering it from that point of view. And muscle is literally our organ. It's its own organ. I think we sort of overlook that. We just say, oh, muscle, you know, muscle makes you strong. Muscle makes you look good. Muscle, you know, improves your body composition. But as I said, it's so much more than that. It's literally the organ of healthy, longer life. So healthy longevity. I've said this in the last episode. We all want to live longer, but we want to live longer, healthily, stronger. You know, what is the point in living longer if you're dependent, you're walking around dependent on other people to take you from here, there, and everywhere, or, you know, worried about breaking bones when, if you were to have a fall, for example. Like, we want quality of life, both now and the future. And quality of life is directly correlated to your muscle mass. And actually, a lot of the chronic diseases of aging that we see today are directly related to the health of your skeletal muscle, the muscle on your body, basically. It also prevents or reverses the situation of insulin resistance, which I've talked about before. One of the biggest risk factors for a rough time in perimenopause is insulin resistance. So this is when the cells in your body and your brain have become resistant to the action of insulin, which means they're ignoring insulin. So once this happens, once they become resistant, they no longer take in the glucose from the bloodstream that insulin's asking them to take in. So the cells in the body and the brain are supposed to respond to the action of insulin, which is to take in, efficiently soak up like a sponge. So you want your cells to be a sponge for glucose, efficiently soak in that sugar or glucose from the bloodstream, use it for energy, store it for energy that can be used later, can be stored in the muscle cells, the liver cells, to be tapped into later on, maybe when you're asleep, to prevent blood sugar from dropping too low, maybe when you're working out, or, you know, you've gone a little bit too long without that next meal, and that stored glucose can kick in. But if the cells don't take that in anymore, this glucose remains in the bloodstream. You're not getting the energy that you need to your body, your extremities and your brain. And that's when something like, you know, brain fog, migraine, headaches can come in, and muscle and joint aches and pains and fatigue. But you're also left with all this excess glucose running around in the bloodstream, which is very dangerous. And insulin has no choice but to store that excess glucose in your fat cells, predominantly around the midsection. And high insulin, because insulin, if the cells aren't taking in glucose in response to insulin, the body, the pancreas specifically, will continue to keep pumping out insulin in response to this glucose remaining in the bloodstream. And high insulin levels are inflammatory, and they lead to this situation known as insulin resistance, which is the precursor to eventually developing type 2 diabetes. So, for example, if you were to have blood work done and you've got a high HbA1c, or even if it's slightly raised, that would be potentially a sign that over the last, because it's a marker of what was going on in your blood sugar levels over roughly the last 3 months. It's not the be-all, end-all marker of something like type 2 diabetes. There's lots of other markers to take into account as well. I can do a separate episode on that. But it would suggest in the last few months you were having issues regulating your blood sugar levels, and potentially there's some insulin resistance there. So the point I'm making is that the more muscle mass we have, the more of a sponge those cells in the body and brain will be to taking in that glucose and soaking it up, which is wonderful. That keeps us in the situation known as insulin sensitive. So that's insulin sensitivity. It's the opposite of resistance, and it is wonderful. It's very, very important that we keep ourselves in that state. Losing estrogen, or even the erratic nature of estrogen in the earlier phases of perimenopause, when it's not necessarily declining, but it's erratic, so we get drops every so often throughout the month, that can put us in a more insulin resistant state that sort of day. And then when estrogen levels do genuinely eventually start to decline in later perimenopause years, and definitely postmenopause, that leaves us more likely to be insulin resistant, because estrogen is a protective hormone for insulin sensitivity. So if we can counteract this by consistently building new muscle mass, then why would we not do that? So really important to understand that one. And insulin resistance is also a big contributor to the so-called midlife muffin top. So where I just explained that when we have high levels of insulin and too much glucose remaining in the bloodstream because the cells aren't taking it in anymore because they're resistant, insulin will store that glucose in body fat cells, which are predominantly around the middle. So that's one of the biggest reasons for the so-called muffin top. Cortisol can also do that as well. And also why some women will report that they used to be this sort of typical pear shape. And as I've got older, late 40s and definitely postmenopause, they've changed into the apple shape, where you've got excess body fat around the middle, almost like what someone would refer to as the spare tire, changing you from that pear shape to an apple shape. And that is a big risk. It's a metabolic health risk, essentially. So it increases our risk of type 2 diabetes if we're not there already, and then increases, you know, the risk of heart disease as well. So definitely something that we want to get a handle on. And again, more muscle mass we have, the more of a glucose sponge those cells will be, and the less likely we are to be storing fat around that middle. So it can really help to prevent that apple shape from developing. So then we have brain health as well. So muscle mass increases something called neurogenesis. Neuro means brain. Genesis means new. So it's the making of new brain cells. And it increases a protein in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. So neuro meaning brain, trophic meaning grow. So BDNF is like, you can liken it to fertilizer for your brain, for your brain cells, the same sort of miracle grow fertilizer you'd use on the soil. BDNF is literally the fertilizer for your brain cells to help them survive, to help them grow, and to make new ones as well. So that is wonderful that we can continue to do that forever if we just put the right things in place. actually a study in 2022 at a health center and school of human nutrition in the US showed a link between low muscle mass and cognitive decline, including mood issues. So cognitive decline, we tend to think of in terms of losing your memory, maybe developing dementia later in life. But that also refers to mood issues. So just generally how we feel, brain fatigue, brain fog, all of those things as well. So the more muscle mass we have, the more of this neurogenesis is going on, more of this BDNF lovely chemical that we've got in our brain. Also, there's the link where the fact that what I just explained, where the more muscle mass we have, the more of a sponge the cells in the body and brain are for glucose. That then means that it's much easier for us to get that glucose energy into the brain. Again, preventing brain fog, preventing brain fatigue, headaches, migraines, and so on, and improving mood issues. And it's muscle that's going to help make those cells be more of a sponge. And then heart health. So very protective of reducing our risk for heart disease. A 2023 study by the Cardiology Journal found that increases in muscle mass is associated with better what we call cardiometabolic health. So essentially reducing the risk of heart attack, stroke, any kind of heart disease. So many reasons to support muscle mass. And then we have immune health and inflammation, which the two things do kind of go together. So contracting muscle, so essentially during aerobic and resistance exercise, so any kind of movement really, when the muscles are needing to contract, that produces and releases into your system a group of molecules called myokines. So these myokines are released into the system when the muscles are contracting. So obviously, the more they're contracting, I guess the more of these myokines are being released. And that would be, you know, they would contract more in a resistance exercise or weights exercise than they would in a regular walking exercise. But any movement at all can help release myokines. So myo means muscle and kine means action. So it's the action of the muscle, and then these molecules are being released. And myokines are hormone-like molecules that play a really big role in modulating the immune system. So essentially modulating all the different immune chemicals, the activity, so it can basically improve how we fight infections and viruses. So for example, a 2013 study found that a single bout of exercise provoked an increase in systemic levels of anti-inflammatory and infection fighting immune cells because of these myokines. So again, yet another really important reason why we need more muscle mass. So these exercise-induced myokines, they can also, they perform anti-inflammatory effects that counteract not only the acute inflammation that we might be fighting in the moment due to like a chronic infection with whether it's COVID or, you know, a bacterial infection from food poisoning, but also that chronic low-grade inflammation. It's the chronic low-grade inflammation that is really rife. It's really common. So many people are walking around chronically inflamed and they wouldn't even know it. Because the symptoms, you can liken the symptoms of chronic low-grade inflammation to really low-grade chronic flu symptoms. So if you imagine you've got the flu, you feel like shit, you go to bed, you can't move, you've got aches, muscle aches and pains, you might have a headache, brain fog, you know, like cotton wool between your head, and you just want to sleep. That is fighting an acute infection. Once that infection's gone, you'll get better. Chronic low-grade inflammation, you can imagine, is just really, really low-grade flu-like symptoms. So you're okay. You go about your business. You go about your day. You don't need to be in bed, phoning in sick. You can still do everything as normal. But at a very low-grade level, you just feel rubbish. You feel like muscle aches and muscle and joint aches and pains, you know, foggy head, maybe a low-grade headache, maybe trouble sleeping, trouble losing weight, or you're gaining weight, autoimmune disease or progression of autoimmunity because of this chronic low-grade inflammation. So that's what it kind of is like, and this sort of low-grade fatigue as well. And it does increase, having this low-grade inflammation, it does, not only does it increase the risk of disease like cardiovascular disease, even some cancers, but it also really drives up all hormonal symptoms at any age, but definitely ramps up a lot of our perimenopause and menopause symptoms and challenges. For example, chronic inflammation can cause, or sort of, it can be the root cause or just intensify those muscle and joint aches and pains that are so common, as I said, brain fog, fatigue, headaches, and so on. So encouraging these myokines is so helpful, which we can do through contracting the muscles more often, and then we can help to reduce inflammation that way. There's lots of other things that we can be doing to support inflammation as well through nutrition and lifestyle habits, but we can talk about that in another episode. So let's now just look at why you need to consistently be building muscle now more than ever. So I keep saying from 40. And essentially, it's because muscle mass decreases approximately anywhere between 3-8% per decade after the age of 30. This is true for everybody, not just women. So everybody past 30 moves into this situation called sarcopenia. Sarcopenia is Latin for lack of flesh. So it's defined as age-related loss of skeletal muscle mass, muscle quality and muscle strength, and the replacement of those muscle fibers with body fat. So this is one of the ways that your body becomes better at storing fat, essentially post 30, but more so past 40. So the decrease of muscle, 3-8% every decade, obviously in the 30 to 40 and then 40 to 50, you're going to have lost more muscle in the 40 decade than you would have in the 30 decade, and so on and so on and so on. Then we have the thing that, you know, as we move into perimenopause, that accelerates, and we'll look at that in a moment. But the good news is that everyone can counteract this muscle loss by doing things that build muscle as part of their daily or weekly routine. So that's to say, consistently building muscle needs to be part of our normal routine, 30 plus, men and women, even more so 40 plus. So that's what we have to have in mind. We're losing muscle mass every 10 years, a certain percentage. That's going to build every, you know, decade on decade. We know why muscle mass is so important. So why wouldn't we now make muscle building activities part of our natural habits, you know, week on week? So targeting all major muscle groups in your workout is really important to ensure comprehensive sort of muscle development and effectively counteract this loss. And that's why weightlifting or strength training specifically is so important, because this is where we're pushing, pulling and lifting relatively heavy weights. And we're doing different sort of moves, you know, like squats, lunges, deadlifts, for example, bench press, pull-ups. And so they are attacking essentially, you know, getting to all of the different big muscle groups in the body. So that's how we'll get a more sort of comprehensive muscle development process going on. And actually, research shows that lifting relatively heavy weights, so when I say relatively, I mean you're heavy, not comparing yourself to other people's heavy, you're heavy at that time, at least twice a week for at least 20 to 30 minutes each time. So go back and listen to my previous episode 16, where I did talk more about how we should be approaching exercise in our 40s and what to do and how and all that. So go back and listen to episode 16 if you haven't already. But that's what's great about this, is that the research shows twice a week for at least 20 to 30 minutes. Obviously, if you could go three times a week, great. Four times a week, great. But the research showed that twice a week was the minimum dose for it to still be effective at helping us to build muscle and strength. And I think that's quite a realistic goal that most people could achieve in the week. So as I said, from 30 plus, we're moving into sarcopenia situation. But from 40 plus, I mentioned that our muscle loss can start to accelerate a little bit more throughout perimenopause and beyond. And that's partly to do with the fact that both estrogen and progesterone are supportive of muscle mass, and they are bone building and bone strengthening. Where progesterone starts to decline early in perimenopause, sort of late 30s onwards, and progressively declines more and more, and estrogen starts to decline in the later perimenopause years, so anywhere from mid to late 40s onwards. And eventually they're both completely gone once we reach menopause itself. So therefore, we really have to do everything we can to support muscle mass and bone health. So I hope that sort of empowered you to say, right, I just need to do this. It's something I need to do for now and my future. So how can we start to consistently build muscle and make this the norm for us? So firstly, protein. I cannot emphasize that enough. Protein, protein, protein. Eating optimal amounts of protein every day is one of the most important ways to support existing muscle mass, but also the making or building of new muscle. Women 40 plus do need to be eating between 1.5 and 2.2 grams of protein per kilo of their own body weight. If a person is quite significantly overweight or obese, then they should ideally use their more sort of ideal body weight, but just make sure that they're not overestimating that, you know, for example, what their ideal body weight should be. You hear a lot of women say, let's say they weigh 65 or 70. Let's say somebody weighs 70 kilos. I hear women say, I just want, my ideal weight is 60. And actually, that's probably quite unrealistic. And they don't necessarily need to be 60 to look, you know, to be a healthy weight and have a healthy body composition, for example. So just be mindful if you are going to, if you're thinking, oh, I'm not going to use my current weight, I'm going to use my ideal weight, that you don't underestimate that too much. But let's say for the average woman, to calculate this, it would be your weight in kilos multiplied by 1.5 and then multiply it by 2.2. And that is your ideal daily intake range. On the days that you would be more sedentary, you know, completely relaxing, then the lower end of the range would be okay, that 1.5 mark. But on the days that you're more active, or, you know, you're lifting your weights and you're just generally more active, you'd want to shoot for closer to the higher end. So I weigh 70 kilos. So for me, my range is between 105 grams if I do 1.5 times 70 and 154 grams if I do 2.2 times 70 per day. Now, I tend to get easily around 120 to 150 grams per day. So I'm well within the range. And most days I'm up towards the optimal range of 154. But putting the range aside for a moment, I basically recommend, you know, if that sounds all just too complicated, I recommend that you eat 30 to 50 grams of high quality protein. What I mean by high quality is, you know, complete sources of protein, preferably animal protein, obviously mix and match with vegetarian protein as well if you want, but 30 to 50 grams of high quality protein at every meal, 30 being the minimum. So if you can get 40, if you can get 35, if you can get 45, great. But doing that at every single meal, three meals a day, that includes breakfast. And in fact, breakfast is probably the most important meal where you do need to get that minimum 30 gram dose of protein in. Because studies show that it takes a minimum of 30 grams of this quality complete protein at every meal to stimulate a process called, that occurs in the body, called muscle protein synthesis, or we'll shorten it to MPS, and to support blood sugar balance. So most women, when they first come to see me, and friends that I speak to, when we work out how much protein they're getting at each meal, they are getting between 15 and 20 grams at the most. And that's usually with lunch and dinner. With breakfast, they're getting anywhere between 5 and 10 grams if they're lucky. So by the end of the day, they're having maybe 50, 60 grams of protein. So you can see how much lower than the ideal range that is. And if we want to stimulate this muscle protein synthesis with every meal that we have every day, we need a minimum dose of 30 grams according to the research with each meal. Then the next thing to dial in is weight training. So again, go back and listen to the previous episode 16, where I talk about this. I'm talking about lifting, pushing, pulling heavier weights. As I said, you're heavy at that time, not somebody else's heavy, by way of exercises like lunges, squats, deadlifts, bench pressing, pull-ups, and so on. Now, research shows that you can see, as I mentioned a minute ago, significant improvements in your strength and your muscle with just two or three 20 or 30 minute strength training sessions a week. That is attainable for most of us. And if you're somebody, again, listen to episode 16, but if you are somebody who is already working out three times a week, but it's all cardio based stuff, for example, then you could switch those to the strength training sessions. And I guarantee you would reap the benefits. You'd feel it, notice it in so many different ways. So that muscle protein synthesis, MPS, is stimulated through proper protein intake, as I just outlined, and through weightlifting, strength training. So weightlifting can start with your own body weight. Again, do go back and listen to episode 16, but eventually we would be at the stage where we want to be, or we need to be, lifting weights with that, and maybe progressing them as well week on week after a period of time, because that is how, you know, once your own body weight, for example, becomes too easy, or once bands become too easy, once smaller dumbbells become too easy, you're going to need to progress your weights to the point where you can actually stimulate this MPS. So other things that are important to consider for preserving the muscle mass you have and for supporting the building of new muscle mass from your protein exercises are to be getting enough quality sleep. I know this is easier said than done when you're in the throes of perimenopause, but it is possible to support better sleep. So go back and listen to episode 14 if you haven't already, where I talk all about sleep in perimenopause and how to support it. Because sleep plays a really important role in building muscle through sleep's own role in muscle protein synthesis, this MPS, and muscle repair. So, you know, if we're doing our strength training, but we're not getting proper sleep to help with that muscle repair, it's going to minimize how much muscle we actually build, you know, because it starts to minimize that muscle protein synthesis. When we sleep, our bodies release a hormone called growth hormone, which helps to facilitate that muscle growth and repair. So it also, sleep reduces inflammation, which can otherwise cause that chronic inflammation I just mentioned, which could otherwise cause muscle damage. Sleep supports good blood sugar regulation, another important factor in our ability to make new muscle and hold on to what we've got. And studies have found that sleep deprivation, and in these studies, sleep deprivation is usually 6 or less hours a night. That would be classed as sleep deprivation, you know, consistently getting 6 or less hours. So these studies have shown that sleep deprivation decreases the activity of the protein making, the protein synthesis pathways in the body, and increases the activity of pathways in the body that favor the loss or the sort of breakdown of muscle mass. The other thing to consider as well is managing stress, supporting your nervous system. Chronic stress, essentially cortisol, stress hormone, can block muscle protein synthesis and also increase muscle loss through a few different mechanisms. But when chronically elevated, basically, as is the case with when we're chronically stressed, cortisol will start to break down muscle mass to convert it into glucose, sugar, for energy, most of which is stored as belly fat because we don't actually need that energy. When our modern day stresses are, they don't require us to fight or flee. You know, there's stresses where we're sitting down, we're not moving, we don't need to move, we don't need to fight, we don't need to flee. We're just, you know, they are, what's the word I'm looking for? Modern day stress isn't physical, where we're running away from a tiger. They are emotional, they're mental. So they're us worrying about people, you know, finances, work, whatever it might be, moving house, going through bereavements, whatever it might be. So, or just being stuck in traffic, being late for work, whatever it is. And we don't need this excess energy, glucose, that cortisol is getting for us. So we have not only the fact that cortisol will be breaking down our muscle mass to give us this glucose that we don't need for energy, and then that glucose we don't need for energy gets stored as belly fat. So one of the biggest reasons to be supporting stress and managing your, you know, your day-to-day stress load. So again, go back and listen to episode 15, which is all about how to manage stress, support your nervous system. But a quick recap of some lifestyle habits to help balance cortisol levels, bring down that stress response, essentially, and tell the brain you're calm and that it doesn't need to release cortisol and you know, activate your fight or flight. So a quick recap of those things would be time in nature. So as much time in nature as you can get in the week. Most people don't have any. Maybe they walk past some trees a couple of times a day, but it's really just taking that effort to say, how could I take a detour sometimes and find myself in a common or a park or woodland or something, or if you live near a beach, or how can you make the time in the morning? If you're somebody like me who works from home, I go out every morning before I come back and get ready for my work day. It's just a rule I've put in place actually since before the pandemic. And I've not, there was obviously the odd morning I can't do it for whatever reason, but I'll get out as soon as I can and make up for it. But for the most part, every morning I'm out in my local big common or park, and I'm just wandering through the trees, and there's various different routes I can take. One of them takes an hour door to door, one of them takes 20 minutes door to door, but I'm, you know, getting into nature in some capacity every morning. And then I might do it again in the afternoon if I can, but at least I'm doing it every morning. Weekends as well, just making that effort to get in there. Qigong or Tai Chi, these are wonderful ways to support your nervous system. They're very calming. Research actually shows Qigong, Tai Chi, gentle yoga actually do support the taking us out of fight or flight and activating our what's known as parasympathetic nervous system, which is the opposite of fight or flight. Deep breathing exercises, as simple as 3 minutes of something known as the 4-6 breathing exercise, which you can just Google if you don't know it already, or just following a guided meditation on one of these apps, whether it's 3 minutes, 5 minutes, however much time you've got, morning, night, maybe during the day for a break. Yoga Nidra, non-sleep deep rest is another name for it. It's basically a lying down meditation where you're scanning the body. So it's a body scan meditation. Again, that's also been shown in research to support the brain and reduce cortisol levels. Lying down with your legs resting up the wall or up on the sofa or up on basically elevating your legs. So it could be up on the sofa, up on a chair, or actually straight up the wall. Having your legs elevated has also been shown to support cortisol. Any kind of meditation, mindfulness practices, colouring in, you know, the mindful colouring in books that everyone started buying during the pandemic, they are actually great. Having a very good evening wind down routine to support good sleep and getting yourself into natural daylight within at least no more than 60 minutes of waking in the morning is really helpful as well. You can use a 10,000 lux light box in the winter months, which is what I do, and then get yourself out into daylight as soon as you can. So that's just a recap of nervous system support. But as I said, go back and listen to episode 15. And also, I can't remember the number of the episode, but there's another episode I did earlier on called Why You're Stressed and Anxious in Your 40s and Understanding Cortisol. So that's a good one as well to listen to, because it really, these cortisol elevations do really interfere with muscle growth, muscle tissue repair. So very important to get a handle on it. So I do hope this episode has been helpful and it's given you some empowering information to make you want to go out there and start building muscle and making sure you're having optimal protein. And if you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future topics or guests, please do get in touch. Of course, if you want to work with me to help you with any of this stuff that I talk about on the podcast, on a one-to-one level, or if you want to join the Empowered Perimenopause subscription, which is £29 a month, cancel any time. So you just stay in the membership for as long as you want to. You get the course to go through completely at your own pace. You just have access to the membership site where everything's held. Lots of, you know, tons of resources and cheat sheets and everything you might need to get you working through the four pillars that I speak about all the time and then taking things further. And we have a monthly group call where that's your chance to just ask your questions and get the help that you need, and a private online space as well to ask questions every day. So all of that is on my website, francescaliparotti.com. If you feel you do want one-to-one support, that's also on the website as well. So I would love to hear from you, and wishing you a lovely rest of the day, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.